Off the Ball.
How you manage your way through that period, if you think of the actual day-to-day running of things, let's say they're going to play on a Friday night and a Monday night and then again on a Friday night, for example. Trying to prepare a proper training schedule where you can get some productive work done and try and improve your team as a unit and improve what you're able to show on the pitch, it just becomes absolutely impossible, and it's really, really tough. Very, very unfair.
I would just go off my backyard and hit the ball against the wall, to be honest with you. I know that's a cliche thing to say, but I genuinely did do that, and I'm glad I did, because I'm very lucky right now. I signed for UCD. I have a degree, and I'm playing week in, week out on the top level of Ireland.
Yeah, well, firstly, yeah, you said about the game being changed from Friday to Saturday. I was actually meant to go over to the Ireland Gibraltar game on Saturday, so that changed my plans too. So, but yeah, on the pitch, you just have to get on with these things. Like, complaining about it, there's nothing we can do about it, and there's nothing the other team can do about it. So,
the best League of Ireland podcast in the business, brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store. This is Off the Ball.
Yes, hello there. You are very welcome to the latest episode of the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. My name is Jamie Moore, with you every week, and we're a day late this week. I'm very sorry about that. My TU Dublin Blanchardstown College team won the First Division League final this week against Tallaght, so we're a day late. Very sorry about that, but thankfully, with so little League of Ireland games, we've got a more general podcast this week. We're going to speak to Shane Keegan, our resident League of Ireland expert, former Wexford and Galway manager, and now a pundit here on Off the Ball, and also a weekly Irish Times columnist, all about the fixture congestion, with some clubs being forced to play 7 league games in just 28 days in the next month or so. Exactly what it means for players, coaches, fans, attendances, and so on. We'll also discuss Jack Byrne's call up to the Ireland senior team and the amount of League of Ireland players in Ireland squads, from under 21s all the way down to under 15s. Our First Division focus will be joined by Jack Tute of Cabinteely. He should be away this weekend with his dad, Paul Tute, the League of Ireland referee, in Gibraltar, cheering on the boys in green. But because Cabinteely's game with Limerick has been moved back a day because of a rugby match in Stradbrook, he's going to miss that game. He's working full-time in DCU in the gym. He's in college in TU Dublin City, formerly DIT, studying. And he's also playing for Cabinteely. He was in Derby as a youngster too. And he's got a really interesting story to tell. We're also going to hear from Josh Collins from UCD, who will also reveal how, as a young player between 13 and 17, he didn't play football very much at all. He'll tell us why. UCD getting their first win of the season against Finn Harps last weekend, and his plans for the future with education in UCD now finished. We'll also run through the fixtures and results from last weekend and this coming weekend, with just one game in the Premier League and a full programme, thankfully, of First Division fixtures. So let's get the podcast on the road. Josh and Jack are along in a few minutes' time. But firstly, I'm very happy to welcome our resident expert back to the podcast, one of them anyway, Mr. Shane Keegan. How are you?
Not too bad, not at all, Jamie, yourself?
Great stuff. Now, Shane, former manager of Galway and also Wexford, and regular on Off the Ball, and also a weekly columnist in the Times as well. Some great reading every week. Now, Shane, you're a former League of Ireland manager, and I'm sure you'll manage in the league again. And there has been much debate over the fixture schedule, and I'm going to just give an example of the Bohemians fixture list over the next little while, right? Because they're a team who are, they train in the evenings because a lot of their players work. And they are going to play, in the space of 28 days, 7 league matches between now and the beginning of May, and also one game in the Leinster Senior Cup. So they're home to Pats, then Cabinteely, then Senior Cup. Then they play Sligo away, Finn Harps away, Dundalk away, 3 in a row. Then at home to UCD, away to Rovers in the Derby, at home to Waterford, all in 28 days. How in God's name is that fair or right or even on the agenda?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy setup, all right, Jamie. I mean, again, look, I suppose trying to put myself in the shoes of some of the managers, or, as you say, Keith, I suppose, in that particular situation. Like, how you manage your way through that period, if you think of the actual day-to-day running of things, let's say they're going to play on a Friday night and a Monday night and then again on a Friday night, for example. Like, Saturday is going to be a write-off, obviously. You'll do a bit of recovery work, probably. Sunday, they'll come in. The session will have to be quite light, a small bit of tactical work. And again, set pieces, you're back into your Monday night, you play again, and you're into the same circle again, where, you know, again, Tuesday morning is going to have to be recovery. Wednesday, you'll maybe get a half-decent session in, and then Thursday is going to have to be light enough again. So, whatever about Keith and the frustrations of that for him, like, as far as I know, Trevor would be taking the vast majority of the training there. I mean, for Trevor, that's a nightmare because he's getting to do little to no proper productive work during that period. So, you know, I know the main issue tends to be about burnout and players having to juggle jobs with it and all that. But with a coach's hat on, trying to prepare a proper training schedule where you can get some productive work done and try and improve your team as a unit and improve what you're able to put to show on the pitch, it just becomes absolutely impossible, and it's really, really tough, very, very unfair.
And we know that the FAI will say that, you know, the clubs don't want a longer season because they've got to pay players and so on and so forth. And I mean, I was just trying to work out there of the 36 league games that are going to be played this season by each of the teams. And again, I was using the example of Bowes. They're going to play 14 after the mid-season break and 22 before the mid-season break, which again doesn't seem to make a huge amount of sense to me watching on. But it's going to have a hit on crowds, on, you know, player fitness, on the quality of the games itself, on the media coverage, on time, on everything. And that's what the FAI will say. And some clubs will say, we'd like a longer season. Other clubs will say, well, I don't want to pay the players for longer than the 40 weeks or whatever it might be. But it, just to think that there's going to be so many games in such a short period of time for all the clubs, and we've spoken about how good the social media has been in clubs promoting themselves and all attendances are up. Well, they're not going to be up over that month.
Yeah, the attendances will suffer. There's absolutely no doubt. But I suppose the only thing I'd say on Jamie is, like, everybody is kind of complaining about it, rightly so, obviously. But, you know, the media are complaining about it, players are complaining about it, management are complaining about it. Very few people seem to be coming up with a solution. Like, obviously, where the FAI got stung was a couple of years ago when they did kind of have the midweek games 50-50, and then Dundalk did better than anybody could have ever expected in Europe, and you ended up with a whole pile of a fixture congestion in the second half of the season. And they just seem to be kind of adamant that they're not going to allow that to happen, which means they're shoving it all into the first half of the season. There has to be a better balance. I don't have the answer to it myself, but rather than people whinging and moaning about it, I would like to see some people come up with some suggestions as to how it could balance out better while still allowing for the potential of a European club or an Irish club doing really, really well in Europe for us.
Yeah, so again, I'm just using Bowes as this example because they have a fixture list in front of me at the moment. So their first game was on March the 15th. Their last league game is scheduled to be on the 25th of October. Clearly, if they get to the FAI Cup final, they'll play in November. There's a weekend off in the middle of the season for the summer break. And the one that gets me is, in the later stage of the FAI Cup, say there's 8 teams left or 16 teams left, but some other teams have been knocked out. Those teams have no games on those weekends because it's reserved for the FAI Cup. And why are games not kind of refixed between clubs? Once we know who's in the FAI Cup last 16, well, there's other teams who they haven't played each other yet. Why are they not put into the fixture schedule? Is there a need for a summer break? And is there just a thought process of extending the season by a couple of weeks? And I think the clubs would actually make back what they feel they're going to lose on wages, on their gates and their match sponsors and that, for those couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think if they sat down and looked at it from that point of view, and maybe that is the way to approach it. Look, at the moment, again, as you say, I think a lot of people aren't aware that, you know, I'm kind of loath to defend the FAI too often. But at the same time, I think people wouldn't be as maybe educated on the point as you are there. People do generally tend to point straight at the FAI and say it's ridiculous how short a season the FAI have it. It is the clubs. It is absolutely the clubs that are dictating that the season is as short as it is. I've been on the inside arguing for a longer season and I've been told straight to my face by my board, no, we will be voting again for the shorter season because financially it's what makes sense. So they are the ones dictating. And yeah, if somebody could sit the clubs maybe down and educate them as to how they could balance the books and how they could potentially even become more profitable from a longer season, that might sway it. And then, look, that would certainly be a win-win for everybody, you know.
Okay, so in the case of a Wexford who you managed Wexford in the Premier Division because you got them up and then at the end of that season you went in and you joined, of course, your next club, and you spent some time there in Galway. Were there much differences between those two clubs in terms of those conversations? And with Wexford in the First Division in comparison to Wexford in the Premier, and I know their crowds haven't been good, would they have been the ones, and would they be one of the clubs who would be saying, listen, we want to pay the players for as little as possible? And Wexford wouldn't, of course, be the only ones.
Absolutely, yeah. They would. And look, to be honest with you, even in the First Division, Jamie, you know, both clubs would also have been arguing in the first season for 3 rounds of fixtures rather than 4, whereas a manager I would have been arguing for 4 rounds of fixtures. And those decisions are always financially based, and obviously the club are always going to vote in their best interest rather than what their first team manager is telling them they want. Until somebody presents to the clubs a kind of a way of making it balanced and that they're not going to lose out on more money, they're never going to vote for it to happen, you know.
Yeah, I think as well on the issue of the summer break, because our league runs through the summer as well, lots of players have kids and kids have summer holidays, so I can see the kind of need for people to want to go away there. And I know, you know, a couple of years ago it would have been a clash with the Euros and so on and so forth as well, but again, it's just something that you could say, listen, is it needed, and if so, you know, would we be able to play a couple of Friday games in that period and whatever as well. And I suppose that's the thing for the clubs, that, you know, not every club is going to agree on it, and, you know, if it was to go to a vote, or, you know, I'm not exactly sure how these things would work, like, do all 20 clubs or do all 10 Premier clubs have to vote for a longer season, and if two clubs don't want it but eight clubs do want it, is it a majority decision, and how does that work? Because every club will be looking out for their own best interests, obviously.
Yeah, I suppose at the time the Premier Clubs Alliance was very much to the fore. I'm not 100% sure how strong that kind of group is still at the moment, and how much input they have, but it generally tended to be fairly well discussed. And look, inevitably, everybody is going to be looking after their own little corner. You're going to have, like, to the European clubs, you know, you've got some of those paying 52-week contracts as is. They certainly have no problem extending the season out. But that's, you know, one third of our teams, and then you're going to have those that are on the relegation end. They're going to have a whole different thing to be looking at, and every, you know, it's so impossible to get 10 clubs to agree on anything, or I don't know what they even need for something to pass, 6-7 clubs to agree on something. Just going back to the mid-season break, yeah, look, what I'd say on that is, I don't know if you've ever gone away the week of the mid-season break.
I have, and the whole League of Ireland's in the airport on the Saturday morning.
It's absolute madness. It's madness. It really, really is. You can't go anywhere in Spain or Portugal without bumping into everybody else you know from around the league. I got in a flight home from Portugal a couple of years ago, sat into my seat, and here was Dean Clark sitting in the seat beside me. So that's... And I think players would be reluctant to lose that. I think they do enjoy having that 1 week kind of break to look forward to. So I probably would be in favour of keeping that in place as well, to be honest. But look, there has to be a solution. There has to be a solution. It's going to take a few heads coming together and to try and figure out a way to make it happen. But something has to be done to avoid the madness that players and coaching staff are going to go through over the next 2 months, that's for sure.
Yeah, and as well, I heard some people making a suggestion that, you know, some clubs this weekend who have games off should actually be playing, even though they're missing a couple of players, because it'll come back to bite them in the arse during the next month when they do have those two or three players back, but they are then playing Friday, Monday for a couple of consecutive weeks as well. And that's something, I suppose, that each club would have to weigh up. And again, if there's two clubs with players in squads, they again would both have to agree, because there are certain rules that you have to have a certain number of players in squads in order to be able to get matches off. And in the case of Bowes, like, they're missing Ali Regba and Andy Lyons are away with the Irish 19s. They've got players in the 17s, and then they've clearly got the couple of players in the 21s in Daryl Lee and Danny Mandrew. So you can understand why they wouldn't play. But then you look at Shamrock Rovers, who have Brandon Kavanagh away, who have one of their main men, Jack Byrne, away with the senior team, and they're still playing their match against Finn Harps, and then they won't have a Monday game to come in one of those periods, if that makes sense. And I suppose all the clubs have had to make those decisions based on what they feel is best for them.
They have, yeah. And look, like you say, I suppose, in fairness to Bowes might argue that the likes of Rovers would have stronger squad depth and be able to deal with having a couple of players missing. Although that said, Bowes have, I suppose, shown particularly good squad depth over when you look at their league and cup sides over the last while. But you've probably hit the nail on the head. It would be gas to see that come the refixture of these games, you could well end up with a scenario where a prominent player has played on the Friday night, they've got a really, really big game coming up on the following Friday night, so they decide to rest them on the Monday night, and the reason that game is played on the Monday night was because they didn't play when the game was actually fixed, because they wanted that player available back then, which, you know, would be quite ironic, but is exactly the kind of thing that could potentially happen, you know?
So the answer is, we don't know what the fix will be, because there are so many variables in the air that all have a say in what happens. And the one thing I would say as well is the momentum that the league has had since the start of the year, with the attendances and the good games, and, you know, Shamrock Rovers doing really well, Dundalk discovering their form, so on and so forth, will totally be lost this weekend, because people who've got into a habit of going to a game every Friday won't have that habit this Friday, particularly in the area of Dublin, where the only game on is Cabinteely and Limerick in Stradbroke on Saturday. Look, I won't be at a game myself this weekend because there's none local enough to kind of go to, and that's the other shame, that momentum has also been lost. And you would wonder next week when people go, "Ah, well, sure, last Friday I went for a few points with the lads, and I might do that again this Friday instead of going to a game."
Very true. Yeah. Habit is everything in the League of Ireland. Trying to get supporters into that habit of it happening on a regular occurrence. You'd really hope that, as you say, the goodwill that's around it at the moment and everything that hopefully, and as is certainly the social media side of things has been absolutely fantastic so far this season, that they'll put a big drive on to make sure that, you know, that should actually be the hook that they use for their social media campaigns, is, you know, something along the lines of, "Are you suffering withdrawal symptoms?" and all this kind of crack, I reckon, might be a way to approach it and make sure that they do get all those people back in the gates as quickly as possible. No, I get where you're coming from. Look, it gives me, I to my shame, haven't managed to get a first division game in yet, so I'll be heading for Athlone this Friday night for the Midlands El Clasico. I'm looking forward to that one now myself. So I am, but yeah, there will be a lot of people who've been at a game every weekend for the last few weekends who will be missing a game this weekend for the first time. You know,
yeah, I'll be in the office myself till 6 on Friday, so I just won't make it to anywhere further than the area of Dublin, unfortunately, as well, and that's again a shame. And I've been trying myself to go to first division games too, to try and see both leagues for this podcast, and I was almost about to set off to go into Longford and Galway last weekend, and of course it was rained off in the afternoon time, so that was something that just happened as well. Shane, just lastly, the point of all this is that we have so many of our players in international squads, which clearly is a fantastic thing. I mean, the 15s were away recently, almost fully made up of underage international players from the younger age League of Ireland. 16s have been away, the under 17s are getting ready to play a couple of friendly games and host the European Championships. At least half that squad will be home based here. Andy Reid's under 18s were just hammered 4-0 today in Turkey, but they had League of Ireland based players too. The 19s doing fantastic over in Russia, won their game, lots of players there in that squad. The 21s, you know, I think have 8 in it, and then Jack Byrne is in the senior team plus loads of other ex League of Ireland boys, so it's a good story in that way to have so many players across the age groups from 15 up being called up by their countries.
That's brilliant, Jamie. It really is absolutely fantastic. I mean, add all that to the fact that our most prominent League of Ireland manager for the last decade or so is going to be managing one of those international sites. I mean, there's a buzz around that under 21 game on Sunday. Again, it's probably a game I'd be hoping to get to on Sunday. There's a buzz around that under 21 game that at times you wouldn't get as much of a buzz around the senior game. You know, again, you hear everybody talking about it. Just an awful lot of people have commented to me that they're going to be heading up to that. It's absolutely brilliant to see. It really, really is. You know, there's a couple of factors feeding into it. Certainly, the lack of opportunities for players in England is strengthening our league at underage level. No doubt about it. The standard of coaching has improved tremendously, so it has. But no, it's brilliant to see. On the Jack Byrne one, it's gas. I think, did I see you? I saw you in Tala the night of the Sligo game. Did I?
You did. There yourself, yes, you? I was.
Look, he was absolutely outstanding. He really, really was. It was as fine a League of Ireland performance as I've seen from an individual. And I was sitting beside Emmett Malone while the game was on, and I just commented that, having seen Mick in the crowd, I kind of commented that it was such a pity that the performance hadn't come 24 hours earlier when it was announced that Alan Brown had pulled out. Because I was saying to myself, you know, geez, he'd have given himself a real good chance of getting called in as Alan Brown's replacement. So it really came as no surprise then to hear that there was another dropout shortly after that and that he was called in. He really couldn't have done any more to impress Mick on the night. I'd seen him the previous week, or previous, might have been 2 weeks prior to that, where they played St. Pat's up in Richmond. I thought he was good that night. I didn't think he was as good as he was in the Sligo Rovers game, but he, you know, there was no doubt that he's got real, real, real quality. And look, it's brilliant to see a League of Ireland player in the squad, and more importantly, it's brilliant to see a player of that standard going to be available to watch every week in on our doorsteps.
Yes, and I never leave League of Ireland games early, right? But I wasn't actually working on Friday. I was just there for a look, and my car was parked so far away, and I'd been out since work. I said, you know what? I think the game was over. Like, Sligo were really poor, and Rovers were a couple of goals up. And I said, you know what? I'll run down and I'll beat the rush away. And of course, literally, as I had walked down the steps of the main stand, Jack Byrne banged in that worldie of a goal, and I had to watch it on Twitter as opposed to in my seat. So I do apologise, but that's what I did.
Never make that mistake, Jamie. Never.
No, I certainly won't. Shane, finally, give me a hand looking ahead to the games this weekend, if you wouldn't mind. One game in the Premier. Jack Byrne won't be playing for Shamrock Rovers, but they are up in Finn Harps, and we believe Finn Harps may be making the pitch a bit smaller again, as they did against Dundalk recently, to try and contain the now league leaders. And if Rovers do win this game, they can actually go 7 clear of Dundalk, albeit with 2 extra games played. And Harps themselves coming off the back of that disappointment, 3-0 away to UCD, although the goals were scored all in the second half, but they'll have been hopeful to get something there. Their manager Ollie Horgan is suspended, the assistant manager Paul Hegarty has had a ban as well, and Harps have struggled, so it'll be interesting to see how that game goes, and if Rovers can pick up another win, and as people say, get those points on the table.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a real set up for Finn Harps kind of game, though. It's the typical kind of one where you write them off before a ball is kicked, and the next thing, Molly gets them organised and gets them rigid, and then I would imagine look to pack the centre of the field as much as possible and play off set pieces. Look, you would still certainly have to lean towards Rovers, so you have, but I wouldn't say it's a foregone conclusion. I wouldn't be surprised to see a nil all out of it, to be honest with you, and I think Ollie would be more than happy with that result. But look, even without Jack Byrne, if you were putting the mortgage on it, you'd have to lean towards Rovers win, all right.
Yes, I would surely agree. And the First Division, all the games thankfully taking place, 4 on Friday. It's Cove against Shells at 7:30. That game is moved from Saturday to Friday because of the Ireland game on Saturday. It's Athlone against Longford, 7:45. Shane's going to that in Athlone Town Stadium in El Grand Clásico, the Midlands Clásico. I was in Athlone on Tuesday managing in a college game, and the new AstroTurf there is great, so that should be a decent game. Galway Drogheda, an important game for both teams, and Wexford against Bray Wanderers, who of course were beaten by Athlone last weekend. And then one game on Saturday in the field, that is Stradbrook, it's Cabinteely against Limerick, and we're going to speak in a few minutes time to Jack Chute from Cabinteely on that one. Shane, what would be your thoughts on those games? I suppose Shell's now top of the table, they'll be hopeful to pick up more points, and you've got the Clásico, Athlone and Longford, that derby with Athlone with 3 wins so far, Drogheda needing to win, Bray needing to win again. It should be another interesting weekend in a good league so far.
It should, yeah, definitely. Athlone, undoubtedly, obviously, have been the real surprise package so far. And, I mean, to be honest with you, if I sat down a month ago and looked at the fixture list, I can't really imagine me putting a circle around Athlone at home to Longford as a game that I'm licking my lips and looking forward to. But that's exactly how it's transpired. Kerry's got them off to a wonderful, wonderful start up there, so he has. And that has the makings of a really, really big game, because both teams will be looking to win it. I think they'd both be, it's the kind of game where both sides are disappointed if they came away with a draw out of it. So they'll both be pushing to win, because Shells, Bray, you know, you don't want to be losing too much ground to those sides this early in the season if you want to be up around in and around that promotion push.
Great stuff, Shane. Thanks a million. Enjoy the games of the weekend, and we'll speak to you soon. And what's next in the Old Irish Times? Have you written your piece for next week, or what's in? I know you've been bringing some local mates to games recently and writing about that. What's on the next agenda?
Yeah, look, I have a piece out in today's Times, all right. So I have, just looking at, just looking at the changes in management styles over the last 20, 30 years. Players, Jamie, as I'm sure you're aware of, their nature has changed. They're probably a bit softer and certainly are dealt with in a different manner than they would have been kind of 20, 30 years ago. And I suppose just looking particularly at Mick McCarthy himself, he's been around as a manager for all of those 20, 30 years, and he's about to head into a game as our manager again. And you look at how he would have went about doing his job 27 years ago when he got his first managerial appointment, as to how he does it now, which I thought it was maybe an interesting discussion to have.
Well, that shall be my bedtime reading this evening, Shane. And a great photo I've just seen on Twitter of the Irish team getting off the plane in Gibraltar. Robbie Keane signing an autograph, the Ireland leading top goal scorer of all time. And the man behind him signing the next autograph, Jack Byrne. So very nice indeed.
Great stuff. Rovers boys will be happy.
Thanks, Shane. See you soon.
Cheers, Jamie.
Yeah, great stuff there, as always, from Shane Keegan. More from him in the Irish Times, as you just heard. You're on the Off The Ball League of Ireland podcast with myself, Jamie Moore, with you every week here on offtheball.com. So thanks very much for joining us. In a few minutes' time, our First Division focus will be joined by Jack Chute. But first, I'm happy to welcome UCD's Josh Collins to the podcast. And Josh will be here in just a second to look back on their most recent win, which was last Friday, where they won 3-0. At home to Finn Harps, goals coming all in the second half. Tim Malloy got the opening goal, and then 2 goals from the young player Richie O'Farrell secured that victory for the students. Some other results of the weekend, and it was an interesting weekend really in the Premier League, because Bowes suffered their first defeat, 2-0 defeat at home to Cork City. Conor McCarthy and a cracking Dan Casey free kick. Dundalk starting to discover some form, thankfully, won 2-0 away to Derry City. Sean Murray and a Patrick Hoobin penalty in that one. Waterford beat St. Pat's by 2-0 at a lashing RSC. It really was raining down there. Aaron Drynan with both goals in that game. And Shamrock Rovers top of the table, a 3-0 win over Sligo. Dan Carr, Ronan Finn, and that man Jack Byrne, who's now in the Ireland senior squad, scored a fantastic goal, which I actually missed because I left early, as I mentioned there, but Shane and Jack now in that Ireland squad. Best of luck to him and the boys in green against Gibraltar this coming weekend. So we're going to hear from Jack Chew in just a second, but firstly, should I say, Josh Collins is on the phone from the UCD. Josh, how are you, sir?
Jamie, how's things?
Not too bad, Josh, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad.
Now, a weekend off for UCD because of international games and players from your squad in international teams and so on and so forth. So how does the League of Ireland week work for many of the Premier League clubs this year with no game this Friday?
Yeah, it's different, all right. It's been a hectic start to the league. Obviously, we have the two lads, the 21s, so we're just back. We're just training at the moment. We had the weekend off, and we've been in Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We're in this Friday and this Sunday, and then be back to normal next week, I suppose.
Yeah, Liam Scales and Neil Ferrugia with the under-21s, and Richie O'Farrell away with the Irish under-19s as well. It's a strange week for the League of Ireland, given that there's only one Premier Division game, and I suppose, you know, I know your younger brother Nathan has been capped loads of times, underage international as well, he's playing in the UK. It's a good sign for the league that we're having to call off games because a lot of our players are in squads.
Yeah, definitely, and if you go through the 21s and 19s, there's a large number of League of Ireland players, and I think that shows how much of a pathway there is now for players to play in League of Ireland and show how good they are, and then get picked for the international team. So I think it's good.
Yeah, and I suppose from the point of view of the UCD players as well, given how busy your year has been, we speak all the time about, you know, the college games, and even up to last week you guys were playing in a Premier Division semi-final, and had you won that, you'd actually been playing on Tuesday night of this week in another game, and you could have had a league game this Friday and so on. So even though I'm sure you've been training hard, a weekend with no match is probably a nice little break.
Yeah, it's come at a good time, to be honest with you. We had the college's semi-final last Tuesday and went to extra time before the St. Harps game on the Friday, so that wasn't ideal. We unfortunately lost in that, and that meant we didn't have a game this year. We would have had a final on Tuesday, it just went, but we lost in the semi-final. So we had this week off, which was a shame to lose, but for the first division, for the Premier Division team, I suppose it's good. There's lads with heavy legs after the extra time, and there was going into the Finn Harps game, I think there was three or four lads struggling. They just got through the game just about.
Yeah, that game finished 3-0 to UCD, which we'll speak about in just a moment. Josh, just on that game against UL, I was doing the commentary for the Striker online, and there was very few people at the game, given it's an afternoon game in a college, and, you know, there was no one from Limerick really going to come up about it. But the one thing I noticed, Josh, was just the amount of talking you do as a centre-back on the pitch, and, you know, in the League of Ireland Premier or even in the First Division, there's crowds there and you can't really hear as much, but because the place was empty, I just really enjoyed hearing the things that the managers and the players were saying to each other as well. And you're definitely one who likes to talk and organise and communicate and speak to the ref and really talk yourself and your team through these type of games.
Yeah, it's something that I've always had, I think, ever since I was young. I've always been known as a bit of a communicator. I think it makes me concentrate more in matches. I prefer to be vocal and make sure I'm doing my own things. I'm concentrating and doing my jobs right. And when I'm doing that, I'm helping lads beside me, whoever's in centre half beside me or right back, whatever. I think it's good to have, you know, a little word at the ref now and again as well, so to get him on your side.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you have that from when you were younger. Where do you think that part of your game came from? Because lots of younger players don't say hardly a word on the pitch, and managers all the time are trying to encourage them to communicate. It's not necessarily, you know, to roar and shout, but just to give different bits of information when you're defending and when you're attacking, and, you know, maybe the odd shout to the ref or the linesman as well. But you mentioned that you had that from quite young, which not every player does.
I suppose I could only think it came from my father. He was a centre half as well, and he would have taught me a few things. And, you know, it's a great trait to have, in my opinion, and especially as a centre back, I think you should be vocal and you should be helping the team out in any way you can. It's what my father taught me, really. That's all.
Yeah, and you mentioned you feel that it helps you in terms of your concentration as well, that even when you're not involved, you know, you're not active in a phase of the game with the balls at the other end or whatever, that you talking and organising just keeps your own focus on what might happen the next time you do have to be involved.
Yeah, definitely. Especially sometimes at centre half, you can go to a few minutes without even touching the ball. And if you're just standing there and you're not talking, it means you're losing concentration on the game, to be honest with you. So, but you just talking, making sure everyone's set up at the back or getting a screen or in midfield, I think it's essential, to be honest with you, especially with sometimes at UCD when we have large possession of the ball and in the higher stages of the pitch.
as a centre back, I think you should be vocal and getting lads in the cover or whatever it needs to be.
Yeah, and I'm sure as well, you know, your relationship with Liam Scales, who's in general your left-sided centre-back partner as well, has been really good over the last couple of years for UCD. And we've spoken about himself and Neil in the 21s and Richie in the 19s as well. Just talk to me a little bit about Liam, and, you know, you're playing with him now for the last couple of years at college level and at first team level too, and how well he's done to get this call up. And he's kind of come really from nowhere to be able to be in the 21s. I think there's 8 League of Ireland-based players in it, which is great. But from your point of view, you'd know him very well, playing beside him every week for the last couple of years.
Yeah, I know Liam very well. I'm good friends with him off the pitch also. I've been playing with him since under-19s, I think. My second year of under-19s, he would have been a year younger than me. And we've just got on great ever since. We're a really good partnership. I think we help each other out on the pitch a lot. But sometimes, if either one of us lose the head, we'd have a quiet word with the other and tell us to cop on or get back into the game or whatever, focus. I think we have a really good partnership in that sense. Liam's a top player, to be honest with you. I think if you've been to a few games, he's been getting noticed this year and last year because of how good he is on the ball, his dribbling, everything. He's a top defender also, as well as on the ball. And to be honest, I think he rightfully deserves to be in the 21s. And hopefully he starts now this Sunday.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing that game on Sunday in Tala as well. And another player who we hope will be playing will be Neil Ferrugia, who again has got some plaudits this season and even towards the end of last season. You know, he had a really good season generally coming back from his collarbone injury too. And I'm sure he's a hard man to get after in the games and training. His pace and his power is something that you know, not many players in this league have. And that's something that has shone through for you guys since you've come up. And clearly that's got him the call up too.
Yeah, Neil, like Liam's a top player. Both of them have great potential. And I think Neil and Liam will both want the big kings in the coming years. With Neil, he was unlucky last year. He missed the first half of the season with a bad collarbone injury, as you say. But he done his pre-season in the summer and came back flying. I think in the end, he was a huge factor in us winning the league, to be honest with you, because he came back like a new signing.
Yeah, and that brings me nicely on to your last international, Richie O'Farrell, who's only 18, and he scored twice in the 3-0 win over Finn Harps on Friday. Josh, the first win of the season for UCD. Timmy Malloy got the opener, and Richie got two on 71 and 83. He's away with the Irish 19s in Russia. He didn't start in their opening game, but hopefully he'll play in one of the last two. And he's a young one who's just joined the club from St. Pat's, and he's got his first couple of goals for you guys and done well in the team, given that you've lost a couple of midfielders, particularly Greg Sloggett and also Darragh O'Connor, who's gone to Cork.
Yeah, Richie's a really exciting player. I know much about him before he signed. I knew that he was playing with Pats in a few positions, but I wasn't too sure what kind of player he was. But he's played really well so far for us. He's playing in the 10. He's a strong boy, and he's still so young. And he gets about the pitch really well, and it was great to see him get 2 goals against Harps, so hopefully he can keep doing that for the rest of the season.
So yeah, Josh, that 3-0 win over Harps as well, the last time you played them, of course, in the ball was that famous night when you got the draw and secured winning the league and so on and so forth, and they ended up going up through the playoffs too. And both teams haven't had ideal starts to this league campaign in terms of points, certainly. I know you guys improved in recent games, particularly in Sligo, where you felt you really should have got something despite losing the game 1-0. So just, I suppose, sum up the importance for me of that win over Harps and also what the game was like. I wasn't at it myself.
Yeah, it was an essential win for us, to be honest with you. Both teams needed a win. When I was winning the game going into it. First half was a tight enough game, as you expect, because both teams don't want to lose and don't want to give up many chances. But I thought we shaded the first half, and then we had a few chances, we just couldn't take them. And then the second half, thankfully, we took those chances, and I thought at the end of the game we deserved the win, to be honest with you. Finn Harps, as always, are a tough team to play against, and most likely they will be down there near the bottom of us, so it was great to get the win over them.
Yeah, and I suppose given the fact that you feel that you did play well in Sligo and, you know, I'm sure in a couple of other games, I know you got a great point against St. Pat's, a match I was at in which you played well, only beaten very narrowly by Dundalk as well and having lost and not scored in the opening 2 league matches. So to get the points that you feel your performance is warranted in the previous couple of games must be a big confidence boost, apart from, you know, obviously the points on the table, just from a confidence point of view to know that, well, we were still doing the same things in Sligo and, you know, against the other teams, and now we've actually got the points that we feel we should have got from those games.
Yeah, it was great to finally get our first win. I thought it was long overdue, to be honest with you, and felt the win has been coming. We played really well against Sligo the week before, and we definitely should have got something from that game. I think we had 20-something shots to their 4 shots, so that was a bit of a freak result. We got a lot of confidence from that result, because going up to Sligo, it's naturally not an easy place to go to, and for us to play so well, we felt like the win was coming. And even with previous games, we went to Dundalk, we lost 2-1. A lot of the games we played in, they've been close games, and we haven't felt like we've been too far away from even getting a result against these big teams. So it was great to finally get the win against St. Hearts.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, a free weekend this weekend before getting back to league action next weekend with a interesting trip to the current league leaders, Shamrock Rovers, which will be one I'm sure you'll be looking forward to playing in, and looking forward to being in Tallaght next Friday to watch that, Josh. Just lastly, we were speaking on WhatsApp before I rang you just about you as a young player and the fact that when you were younger you weren't always in teams and, you know, you weren't the biggest, and now you're a 21-year-old playing every week in the Premier Division, having won First Division titles and having, you know, done so well playing in your college too. And you said to me you felt if you were 15 now, you wouldn't actually be signed for a League of Ireland under 15 team. Tell me more.
Yeah, between the ages of 12 to 16, 13 to 16, 17, I played very little football. I would have been a late developer. I had terrible pains in my knees. There was 10 months I went without even running, I'd say. I went to doctors, went to physios. No one knew what I was. It was really odd. And then I stuck at it, though. My dad was my coach with Cherry Orchard, and I think that helped a lot. I wouldn't have been playing, but I'd still go training every night. And when I wasn't injured, I'd still go training despite being remarkably smaller than the rest of the lads, I suppose. And I stuck at, I suppose, due to my dad, my parents. They reassured me that it'll be all right in the end. I'll get there. There was times I felt like just throwing it all in because I just wasn't enjoying it. It was tough sometimes with lads would be bigger than me, and I just didn't have the strength to get away from lads or, you know, yourself. So I stuck at it basically, and I went from strength to strength. I was 16, 17. I finally got my growth spurt, and I broke back into the Cherry Orchard team as a right back, and played. Got a good 9 months, I think, starting for Cherry Orchard. We won the All Ireland, we won the league, and I got scouted basically to sign for UCD, and ever since then I've basically gone from strength to strength and strength, as I said. So if I was a kid of today, if I was 15 today, would I get picked for UCD or another League of Ireland team? I don't know, to be honest with you. I can understand that these clubs want the best players and stuff, and I'm a really big fan of the new league setup. I think it's what's needed for this country. But for late developers like me, like, where do they go? Some might be as lucky as I have been with my parents, who made, like, not forced me to stick with it, but they reassured me. Some mightn't be as lucky as me, and they might just throw in the towel. And to be honest with you, I'm grateful I didn't.
Yeah, and just on that, on our last question, Josh, what would you say to, like, a young player listening to this, or a parent of a player, and there's so many, you know, really good schoolboy players in Dublin and in the league in general, you know, playing across the country, and maybe they're not picked by their club or by the DDSL or by their local representative team or by their international manager or by a League of Ireland club at 13 or 14, but by 17 they may have overtaken others who were picked at 13, as you have done. I'm sure there are players who are your age who were playing every week and getting picked for everything when they were 13, 14, 15, maybe not even playing now. What would you say to that kid or to that parent listening to keep at it and to keep going and to do everything that they can to make sure that when those years do roll on, they're where you are, for example?
It's crazy. It's crazy when I look back at it now. There's some lads that went over to England at 15, 16. I wouldn't even been playing football. Like, I would have been just training, just sticking at it. And they're not even playing football anymore. And I'm playing the top level in Ireland. So it's crazy to see that. But what I'd say to kids who are like me or who can't get into some teams, or parents who are listening to this, I'd just say stick at it, you know, like, and eventually you'll get that strength. Eventually everyone catches up with each other. And that's when who's most technically or who has the mind of a game for the game comes true, to be honest with you. And you just have to stick with it. And it's hard times, definitely tough times, especially when you're playing, man, and you even are playing matches and there's lads just running past you and there's nothing you can do. If that can be tough, but if you stick out, when I was, I'd say 14, 15, 16, I would just go out my back garden and just hit the ball against the wall, to be honest with you. I know that's a cliche thing to say, but I genuinely did do that, and I'm glad I did, because I'm very lucky right now. I signed for UCD. I have a degree now. I have a degree, and I'm playing week in, week out on the top level of Ireland. So I'm really grateful to my parents, really, for reassuring me that it will be all right in the end.
And of course, all the hard work you put in yourself. Great stuff, Josh. Really interesting talking to you, as always. Enjoy the weekend off from games, and we'll speak to you later in the season. Thanks a million.
Thanks. Thanks, Jamie.
Yeah, and just one game in the Premier League this weekend. Josh won't be in it because UCD aren't playing. It's Finn Harps against Shamrock Rovers, an 8 o'clock kickoff down there in Ballybuffet. Now it's time for our Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast, First Division Focus, and a great weekend of games again last weekend. Shelburne top of the table, a 3-0 win at home to Wexford. All the goals in the second half, Darren Noon, Ryan Brennan and Dan O'Byrne back from a broken foot to score that goal. The other result of the weekend was really Athlone's 1-0 win away to Bray Wanderers. Aaron Brilley got that goal, so Athlone doing really well, and Bray would have probably expected to get something from that game. It finished Drogheda 1, Cabinteely 4. A surprise result, really. Cabinteely's Rob Manley scored a hat-trick, while Mark Hughes got one back for Drogheda. And then a Luke Geller OG secured a 4-1 victory for Cabo. And the other game finished Limerick 3, Cove Ramblers 1. A first win of the season for Tommy Barrett and Limerick down there in the Markets Field. Kieran Hanlon, Connor Ellis and Kieran Hanlon again with the goals there. Jazze Kabia got the only goal of the game for Cove. Among game postponed, I was almost about to set off to go and see Longford against Galway down there in City Calling Stadium. But the lashing rain on Saturday meant that game was called off, and that will be refixed in due course. So now it's time to hear from Jack Chute, Cabin TD player, played for Derby, played for some other clubs in the League of Ireland, and his dad Paul is also a top League of Ireland ref. So Jack joins us on the line now, taking his break from work. How are you, sir? Jack Chute from Cabin TD. Welcome to the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. Jack, how are you?
How are you, Danny? What's the crack? How are you?
I'm great, thanks, sir. Yourself?
I'm good, just on my break and work here, so can answer the call.
Yes, Jack taking a break from his job working in the gym and everything sports related in DCU there, Jack. So apart from being a footballer and also being a student in a different college in what's formerly called DIT, now TU Dublin City campus, playing for Cabinteely, working in UCD, you're a busy boy.
Yeah, a bit all over the place, Dublin, out in Cabinteely, Ballymun, DCU and then DIT in town, so I'm keeping busy, but better busy than having nothing else to do, you know.
I assume you drive.
I do drive, luckily enough. Couldn't rely on the buses there, Lewis, there in Dublin, could I?
Yeah, no, of course not. No, and I was speaking to a couple of the lads recently in Cabinteely, and they were just saying, you know, it's very common in First Division clubs for lads to be in college, to be working and to be playing football as well. Just explain to me how your week works, because, you know, at the start there I said you're quite busy, which I said tongue-in-cheek, but it's actually true.
Yeah, most of the lads will be, in especially in college or else working. I said there's only two or three lads that work full-time in Cabo. So, on a Monday morning I'd be working till 6 till 2 and then training in the evening. Then Tuesday I'd be working in the evening. Wednesday work in the morning, training in the evening. Thursday work in the evening. And then I try to stay off work then on the Friday for a game. So then I'm sort of in college as well during the week. So just trying to fit it all in, to be honest. The days I'm in college in the day, then I work an evening shift. So part-time, but luckily enough, with my job and with college and stuff, I'm able to be a bit flexible, so it doesn't work out too bad.
Yeah, and you know, with the long hours that you're doing, what are the main things that you have to do to make sure that you're able to perform in work, in college and at football, in terms of like sleep and food and, you know, making sure you have enough food prepared, and also that when you are being able to train and play and work, that you're doing it to the best level that you can do?
Yeah, well, I suppose a lot of it comes down to like preparation, like bringing food into work and stuff like that. So I'm not relying on getting stuff in here or just eating crap. And then sometimes I go from a 10 o'clock finish of work into a 6 o'clock shift in the morning. So trying to get a nap during the day for maybe an hour. So I come in from work, my mom wants to talk to me and I'm rushing up to bed. She probably thinks I'm not in the best humour. But really, I'm just trying to keep my energy levels high for football, because that's what I'm trying to give me all to at the minute, you know.
Yeah, and if we talk about the football firstly, Jack, it's been an interesting start to the season for your club.
Yeah.
You've won recently away in Drogheda 4-1, drew 1-1 with Longford, and you were also beaten 3-2 by Shell. Sorry, you beat Shell 3-2 in Tulker, yeah, should I say, having lost 3-0 to Bray on the opening night of the season. So how would you look back on the start of the season, four league games in?
Yeah, we've had a good start. I think we've played some of the top teams in the division, so everyone in the division is going to be a tough game. But we've had a good start. I thought on the first night of the season when we lost to Bray 3-0, sorry, didn't really affect the game. They got the win, so forgetting about that, then we moved on to Shells. And we're all up for it, really, because we knew we put in a good performance against Bray. Went into that and won, and we've just carried that on, to be honest. Longford last week was scrappy, I think, on our behalf, and I think their players would say that a draw was probably a fair result. And then in Drogheda, we were very good again, so we're hoping just to continue that form and keep the consistency levels, because I think that's where we fell short last season. We were playing the better teams winning, and then the so-called weaker teams in the league we were dropping points to, or even winning the big teams, and then the following week we'd lose or slip up. So we need to just stay consistent and that's what's going to keep us going up in the league.
Yeah, and of course, most recently as well, on Bank Holiday Monday, beat Bray 2-1 in the Leinster Senior Cup as well. Jack, you mentioned your last home game against Longford, and your next home game is taking place this Saturday at 2:30 at home to Limerick in Stradbroke. Have to ask you about the pitch. It's the worst I've ever seen in the league. What was it like for you guys to play on? And it's not ideal for either team, home or away, to have to play on that.
Yeah, well, listen, it's a tough one because Cabo obviously are using that ground at a rugby club. We're not as lucky as some of the clubs to have our own ground. So at the minute, the pitch is in the best condition. But listen, it's the same for both teams on a Friday night. I think that every team should be able to adapt to whatever pitch they're on. Like, since I've been playing when I was young, I've played in the Lawns, and the Lawns isn't a great pitch. So I think every team should be able to adapt and play the conditions. So it's the same for both teams on Friday night. We're both going to go out, try to win the game, and take it from there. I'm sure someone will be complaining about the pitch by the end of it, so I don't really get too focused on that.
Yeah, and I think as well, the game this weekend has had to be moved because of a rugby game this week as well. And I suppose from your point of view, you just need to try and, you know, in these matches, be able to be at your best level. And then when you hear people and opposition players and that, you know, speaking about the pitch and that, I'm sure in private you guys would like to have a better pitch, but it's not in your control as a Cabin TD player or in the clubs really. But and in the summer it will get better, but I'm sure it's quite difficult to play on. Like the photos I saw of the Longford game, it just didn't look good at all.
Yeah, well, firstly, you said about the game being changed from Friday to Saturday. I was actually meant to go over to the Ireland and Gibraltar game on Saturday, so that changed my plans too. So, but yeah, on the pitch, look, it's bobbly, and you're sort of having to take an extra touch, and you can't stay on the ball for as long as you probably would. But you just have to get on with these things. Like, complaining about it, there's nothing we can do about it, and there's nothing the other team can do about it. So you just got to get on with it and play the game and give it your all, really.
Yes, now we're talking to Jack Chute here on the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast, son of the legendary League of Ireland referee, Mr. Paul Chute. And Paul is actually en route to Gibraltar now, because he's at every single Ireland game, home and away, and Jack's been at lots of them with him. And I texted Paul to say, Paul, is there any gossip on Jack? And he said, well, he should be actually with me now on the way to Gibraltar, but he's not because the game was moved. So that's an absolute disaster.
Yeah, sure, what can you do? Cavill comes first. But yeah, I was meant to go over Saturday morning, fly to Malaga, go to the game Saturday night, and be back on Tuesday. And then go to the home game when she was against Georgia. But obviously, yeah, the game got changed, so those plans got ripped up.
So, over the years, how many games have you been to with your dad, and what sort of thoughts do you have? And I suppose when you look back when you're older, and even now, some unbelievable memories going with your dad, who's also a mad football man, cheering on the boys in green.
Yeah, I've had some great memories. The furthest away trip that I can remember, or like the longest one back, would probably be Germany. It was a 0-0 draw. It was just after a Euro campaign, but he's been bringing my older brother since he was no age. Like, he brought him to Korea and Japan for the World Cup. I've been to Austria, Scotland. I've been to plenty of countries, Denmark twice. But I've had great memories. Most of the times when we go on the away trips, the results are good too, so just makes for a better trip. So at the minute, him and my little brother are on the way over, and then my older brother's going over on Saturday to them, so.
Oh, you're going to be
missing out on that one, but what can you do?
Yeah, and I think the game is at 4:30 or 5:00 Irish time Saturday, so you might just be able to get home from Stradbroke to watch it maybe on telly.
Yeah, it's at 5:00, so after the game, be rushing home to watch it on the telly. I'll probably see me dad on the telly, because he's always getting his face on it.
Hopefully you're 4-0 up against Limerick, and the gaffer can take you off and send you off on your way a bit early.
Yeah, I might catch a little private jet over there if I'm lucky, yeah.
Jack, what's it like having a dad who is a League of Ireland referee and a former, I think he's the best referee in the league. I'm not saying that because you're on the podcast with me, but I've said this publicly before. He talks to players, he actually knows them by first name, and if someone wants to tell him to F off, he'll tell them to F off back and won't book them or send them off or whatever as well. But it's a unique experience, because I know he can't ref games you're involved in, and also because you're playing in DIT, he refs some college games too. He can't ref games that you're involved in there either, so it's a strange one, and to have a son and a dad who's a ref in the same league.
Yeah, it is a strange one, to be honest. Luckily enough for me, when I came back from England, he sort of could tell me a bit more about the clubs here, because I used to go to the matches when I was younger, when he was reffing. Like, if it would be up in Derry or Rovers would be in the closest club to me. But I would have went all around the country to whatever games he was reffing. So I sort of didn't know what was going on for the 3 or 4 years. Just kept an eye on the results when I was away in England. But yeah, it is a different one. a lot of players do say that he's one you can speak to and that you won't really take anything too seriously on you and you won't book you for talking to him. So it's more hearing that rather than the bad stuff you hear.
Of course. So when you were a kid, you actually went to watch your dad refereeing games. That's really cool. So your first introduction to League of Ireland as such was watching him being a ref.
Yeah, definitely. I remember going to the Brandy a good few times. I remember being at Pat's game. I can't remember who it was against now, but they won the league, I think it was, in Inchicore.
Against Sligo, I think it was.
Probably, yeah. I remember going to Bowes and Rovers games. That was my first introduction to the League of Ireland football, being through my dad. So then, ever since then, I've kept an eye on the results when I was away in England and stuff, and now I'm playing it. So.
Yes, nice. So we spoke about, Jack, your introduction to League of Ireland football from your dad, but you were also a dab hand at the El Ga and playing for the Dubs underage. Tell us a little bit about that. And like loads of kids, we had Aaron Dobbs from Longford on the podcast last week, and he was saying the same thing. You know, he was playing for Wexford and his dad was pushing him towards football, and he was actually hiding his bag in a ditch to go and play Ga when he shouldn't have been. And you were really good at Gaelic football as well.
Yeah, I played with Luke and Sarsfields since I was young, played football and Gaelic. Got up to about under 16s, and I started under 15, 16s. I started playing for the Dublin underage team. James Talbot with Bowes, Dan Casey with Cork was both with them as well. But we were both playing football around the emerging talent team and the Irish squad and stuff like that. So we sort of had to push for one and take one more a bit more serious. So the three of us ended up choosing football, and to be honest, I quite miss it. But football is more important to me, and I enjoy it more. Last season, two seasons ago in the off season, I ended up playing for the under 21s, Luke Garfield's led for a couple of games. So that was a good crack and interesting.
Yeah, and at the time when you were playing for Cherry Orchard, anyway, of course, just before you moved away to Derby, and you were playing GAA at a good level, and even like you said, since you've been back in the League of Ireland, you've played the odd game. How is it, you know, being able to strike that balance? And, you know, I find it very interesting as well that, you know, certain people are very, very good at a couple of different sports. And that, I mean, even talking to Dobbsy last week, he was saying that, you know, his movement and his finishing and stuff is as applicable on a Gaelic football pitch as it is on a soccer pitch. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I found that football and Gaelic ball help each other, to be honest. The fitness levels in Gaelic really pushed me for with Cherry Orchard. Like, I was a full playing right full or else right wing at the time. And I was just able to keep going all day. I think it was because I used to play a football match on a Saturday and then play a Gaelic match a couple of hours later. So it's doing two in a row. I think that helped with that. And then with football, I think the agility side of things and sort of seeing a pass or whatever helped me with the GAA. So they both really helped each other out, to be honest.
And would you still now keep an eye on the Dubs results and Luke and Sarsfields and maybe get to the odd game and stuff?
Yeah, well, my mum's partner is still heavily involved with the senior team in Luke and Sarsfield, so my little brother still plays. He's with the minors at the minute. And I keep an eye out on the Dubs results and I try to get to as many games as I can. Saturday I didn't go because I was working. I probably would have went to the Tyrone match. But yeah, I still have a big interest in the Gaelic football. Not so much the hurling.
Yeah, I was at Croker myself a couple of weeks and really enjoy watching the Dubs as well. Jack, lastly, I know you're almost heading back to work, so I won't keep you for too much longer. We spoke to a couple of people in recent weeks and months on the podcast about being in England and coming back, and, you know, an interview we did with Keelan Dillon, who's now playing for Athlone, you know, did really well, and we got some really nice comments about how honestly he spoke about his time there. For you, I just wanted to ask, you moved from Cherry Orchard to Derby in 2012 and you came back and you've played for Athlone and Shells, and obviously now you're playing for, you know, we've spoken already about, you know, what you're doing this season and stuff like that. What advice would you give to you as a 16-year-old now, looking back on that kind of 7 years later, now playing for Cabinteely, but looking back all those years ago when you did move away and having a time now to become an adult and to kind of look back on it all?
I'd probably just tell myself how tough it would be that bit more, sort of off the pitch. Like, football's great when you're in the club, but you're finished at like 11 or 12 most days and you're going home to the same room or whatever. So I'd probably just say how tough it would be for myself. But I have no regrets about going over at that age. You see a chance and you have to take it. And things could have worked out differently, but they didn't. A lot of players now probably jump straight away, but I think with the new under 17s, 15s, I think it's now 13s as well, League of Ireland, it's put a thing in players' minds now that they can say, I can stay here and play at the top level in Ireland rather than go away. So I think that's a great introduction to the league.
Yeah, and again, you know, from that interview I mentioned and others too, it seems, and you know, it's definitely true that even though things didn't work out and you know, you're now home, the person you are now and the football you are now was definitely shaped by those experiences in England. What sort of experiences and, you know, what sort of things would you say helped shape the person you are now from a footballing point of view and also maybe mentally?
Yeah, well, I'm definitely a lot mentally stronger. I think I can take a lot more because I've been through a lot of tough times in England. I've learned a lot, whether that be in the gym or on the football pitch, through the coaches at Derby and being there for 4 years in a full-time environment. But, yeah, a lot of it you just try to take and bring it into Cavadilly now. And when I'm even outside of football, like going home from to my digs and having to do stuff either by myself or with the digs, someone who looked after me, I sort of bring it home now and help my man out that bit more that I probably wouldn't have if I didn't move away, you know, because I would have took it for granted.
Yeah, and when you went over, like every 16-year-old, you're 100% sure in your own head that you're going to make it and you're going to play football in England for the next 15 years and, you know, become a millionaire and so on and so forth. Yeah. When you have to come back and then, you know, you've jumped from Athlone to Shells to Cabinteely and stuff and you're working and you're now, thankfully, in education and in college, what's that, or what was that transition for you like at, you know, at that time?
It's horrible. I remember I went on trial for 2 or 3 days with Portsmouth after my contract finished with Derby. And I was thinking to myself, great, I'll go down here, I have a chance. If I do well, I get offered a contract for at least, whatever, 6 months or a year. And I can push on from there. I went down, I played a game against Crawley. And it was one of the best games I thought I played in like a couple of months or years, even like, and I remember going into the changing room then after and being told that there wasn't a contract there for me, that there wasn't a reserve team. So I didn't really see where I could push on. Then I came back for a week. Like, I didn't really know what to do with myself. I had no education. Didn't have a trade or anything like that. I remember my godmother's husband, he helped me out. He brought me into his printing company and I started working with him for a few months. And then some college courses just started to come up. And I seen a PLC course in Inchicore, which isn't too far away from me, in leisure management, sport and leisure management. So it was something that I was interested in and I went for that. That was 2 years there. And that's how I got my job in DCU and that's how I pushed on to do a degree in college, which I'm doing now. So it's a tough role, but I think if you stick at it and you work hard enough, like, you can get there, you know?
Yeah, because on a last note, I wanted to ask you that when you come home and you've no education, well, we say no education, you've not done your leaving cert, and I think it's fair to say the education offered by the majority of English clubs is not up to a standard that if you do have to come home or whatever, you can't go straight into a university and get into a degree. What's the process? You said you had to do a PLC course, and basically you have to spend an extra couple of years in education to be able to go to a DIT or a DCU or a Blanche IT or whatever that may be.
Yeah, listen, that's what I'd say. If any kids or parents are even, if they're thinking about going to England to play football and they think they won't get their leaving cert, I wouldn't really be put off by that reason because you can always come back. I've done a 2-year PLC course. It just takes that bit longer and a bit more hard work. So I've done a 2-year PLC course, which enabled me to get the points that I probably would have in my leaving cert to go on and do a degree in college. So I was lucky enough to do it that way. The PLC course I've done, like, 30 people started out in it and only three or four finished it. So it was tough. You were going in the classrooms most days on your own with a teacher, or sometimes the teacher wouldn't show up because there wasn't enough students there. But I knew that I had to get it done, and that's what I've done. So now I'm on the bigger and better things in college and stuff. So I'm happy I've done it now.
Great stuff, Jack Chew. Thanks a million for your time. Enjoy the rest of work tonight. Best of luck on Saturday against Limerick, and hopefully the boys in green can win in Gibraltar in your absence. Thanks, Jack.
Yeah, thanks. 2 good results Saturday, hopefully.
Yeah, the First Division fixture this coming weekend, and thanks very much to Jack Chute for his time. All the games taking place on Friday. It's Cove against Shells at 7:30. The other 3 games are all 7:45. It's Athlone against Longford, Galway against Drogheda, and Wexford against Bray Wanderers. And I did say all games take place on Friday, but I'm actually wrong, because Cabinteely against Limerick, which was due to be on Friday in Stradbroke, has been moved due to a rugby match there, which we spoke about there with Jack Chute and the awful pitch. That game will take place in Stradbroke on Saturday at 2:30. So that is it for another week on the Off The Ball League of Ireland podcast. Thank you very much for joining us, and to all of our guests, Jack Chute, Josh Collins and Shane Keegan. More from all of them in the podcast section of offtheball.com. We're back next week, folks, where we're going to speak to some of our League of Ireland internationals from the 19s, from the 21s and also from the senior team. So we'll chat to you then, folks. Have a great weekend. If you can, get to a game. I know there's not too many on, but sure, do your best. And best of luck to the boys in green as well against Gibraltar. Come on, you boys in green. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Off the Ball's League of Ireland podcast. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app.
cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.